answering your tough financial questions for the past 26 years. It's Allworth's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hansen and Pat McClain. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it's about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hansen and Pat McClain would like to help you by answering your call. To join Allworth's Money Matters, call now at 833-99-WORTH. That's 833-99-W-O-R-T-H.
Welcome to Allworth's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hansen.
I'm Pat McClain.
Glad you are with us as we talk about financial matters. Both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisor, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays with people like yourself, and we broadcast on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. So whether you're listening to us on terrestrial radio or a podcast, we want you to consider this a great source for financial information.
Oh, and by the way, we had mentioned a couple weeks ago, maybe even last week, that if you listen to podcasts, to go ahead and rate us or rank us or give us stars or take them away or something like that.
Review us.
Oh, review us.
We appreciate all those that have taken the time.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. There were a number of you that have reviewed us, and apparently in the podcast game, this is a big deal.
Have you never reviewed anyone else's podcast? They make it pretty simple.
I have, I think, once.
Yes, I do.
I listen to a lot of podcasts.
I do, too. More and more.
Yes, yes.
There's some great ones out there.
Really esoteric stuff, too.
I think it's what's... Well, we're getting off topic, so let's get back to...
Okay, what do you think? Already, we're 2 minutes into the show.
So what did you do last weekend, Pat?
Already 2 minutes into the show.
Anyway, if you want to join our program, you have a question for us, call our number. We will schedule a time to where we can take your call. 1-833-99-WORTH is the number. Again, it's toll-free, 833-99-WORTH. And numerically, it's 833-999-6784. And love to take your call. And let's start off with calls here right off the bat. We're going to go in the Bay Area and talk with Teresa. Teresa, you're with Allworth's Money Matters.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, thanks for joining us.
I am 33. I work for the federal government, and I'm starting to look at my retirement and my TSP allocation.
Okay.
So projecting to retire probably around 2050 when I'm about 65. Right now, and you know, now that I just had a daughter, got married, all that, really making sure
all this
that
adulting
I'm setting,
stuff. Yes.
I know, the adulting stuff, making sure I'm setting myself up for, you know, a comfortable retirement in the future. So I've got about 70% of my TSP allocations in 2040 funds. So I already know that that's not accurate, since I'm going to be retiring around 2050. And then the other 30% in G funds. So I'm wondering, besides switching to the 2050, what should I be looking at as far as long-term growth?
So the rest of the listeners who don't speak the federal pension plan,
the TSP and the G fund.
The TSP is the thrift savings plan.
It's the government's 401k.
Government's 401k. And is the G fund, I don't remember what the G fund, is that the equity fund?
That's government securities.
Oh, got it. Which one is the equity fund?
Let's see, there's F fund, fixed income index, C fund is common stock, S fund, small cap stock, and I fund is international stock.
So here's...
All of those are index.
Yeah.
So if you were my little sister, or my daughter for that matter, each way. So here's, you're 33, you don't need these dollars for 32 years.
And that's when you need the first dollar.
Yes.
That's
right.
When you need the first dollar. Some of these dollars you may not spend, think about this, for over 50 years.
When you're in your 80s. So what we want to look at is what's got the highest probability of growth for the next 30 to 50 years. And what we find often happens, Teresa, is people get confused or they forget with their long-term objective, which is typically retirement income, and confuse that with current market value. because the markets go up and the markets go down, right? You're 33. Between now and the time you hit 65, you're going to go through many recessions.
Yeah, it could be
horrible economic times.
It could be 7 + 8 times. There will be times where you will think, this is awful. The world is coming to an end. Financially, how does this... And if you're thinking, well, why would you say that? It wasn't that long ago that we had the Great Recession, which is the biggest right. downturn since the Great Depression. And if you look back at it now, you think, wow, that was pretty scary. But look at where the markets are again.
Yeah. I mean, if you step back far enough, it doesn't even look like there's downturns because things continue to march higher and higher. I mean, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, when it started 100 plus years ago, the index was at about 100, right? And you see where it is today as companies continue to grow and new companies emerge in the marketplace, new technologies.
So you have a extremely conservative portfolio, right?
For someone your age.
Okay.
Extremely. If you were my daughter, as Scott said, or my little sister, I would have you put 100% of the dollars in stock.
Yes.
And I'd probably do 70 to 80% of it. I would mix it between the common stock, the international, and the small cap.
That's the three I wrote down is the same exact
It's
idea.
Almost like we've done this before. And the reason is, this is where you're going to get the highest probability of the largest lump of money, and you won't keep it in this particular portfolio forever.
But you will for the next 20 plus years.
And then at that point in time, you can start getting a little bit more conservative.
If you remember anything from this call, if you historically last 100 years or so, stocks have returned about 10% a year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but with that, the average during the year, the average year, there's about a 14% decline. So, you know, we see these times the market's off several hundred points or now 1,000 points, and you turn on the TV and all these people talking about how things are going to keep going worse or whatever. Historically, that happens every year. About every 4 years, the stock market has a negative year. You lose money. And if you look over a 15-year period, historically, you have growth 99.9% of the time. So if we want to look at what's the statistically the highest probability of Teresa having success with her investments, it's owning the great companies of the world that produce goods and services that we all buy.
And the worst part of your portfolio is how you react to it, not the portfolio itself.
100%.
So, you know, I was just thinking this when I said you could be my daughter or my little sister. I just allocated my nieces and nephews, a couple of them, their portfolios, and they're about
all stock.
Teresa's age, and they're all stock.
I'm 52, Teresa. My 401k is still all stock.
As is mine.
Okay.
Because it's not, I mean, I probably won't touch it until I'm 70 and a half when they force me to, because I don't plan on retiring at 65, but...
Yeah,
but it's really based upon investments are based upon your time horizon, how long you have to go, and then as Pat said, it's your ability to withstand the ups and downs.
Yeah. And you want to put the maximum you can into this. And obviously, with the new child, you're probably thinking about a 529 plan or a college savings plan, and there you would just start that, and you would go with the aggressive age based plan. So most states have an age based plan. Go with the aggressive.
And it gets more conservative as the child gets closer to the college time, because you don't want any money in stocks if your kid's going to college the next year.
Yeah, because that payout is not a lifetime. It's hopefully it's 4 years. Sometimes it's six. It depends on.
So if you are my sister, I would recommend you put 70% in U.S. company, large company stocks, 10% in small company stocks, and 20% in international stocks.
And let it go. Okay. Don't do it.
Okay. And so is there any value in doing like the 2050 life cycle fund?
Nope.
Okay.
You're going to pay more in fees because they're more expensive.
And you're going to have a bond
exposure.
You'll
have some bond. You don't need any bond.
You don't need it. You don't need it.
Okay.
And then just stay out of debt as much as you can. Don't live beyond your means.
And you'll be totally set.
And you'll be set.
It's not rocket science.
Yes. Trying very hard to do that.
Yes.
Well, you're still 33. You're pretty young.
Yeah.
How old is your daughter?
She's 18 months.
Oh, good for you.
That's a fun. At that age, it gets more and more. Every month's like more fun.
Oh, we watch our niece's daughter about once every 2 weeks, and it's great.
Yeah,
I actually go home early to see her.
Do you?
From work. Oh yeah, it's great.
All right, Teresa. I wish you well.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks. You know, it's always good when you get young people in life getting started.
Oh yeah. You know what I like most about watching this 18-month-old that comes over and we watch her, like I said, once every week, once every 2 weeks, is that, like, she goes home. At the end of the day, the baby leaves.
Yeah. Well, of course, you're just a great uncle?
Yeah.
Perfect, yeah.
Yeah,
you have no real responsibility.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, when
you're
old kids,
there to have fun.
Your old kids, they don't leave at the end of the day.
Yeah, and you're actually responsible for some of it, right?
Yeah, in fact, some of them don't leave at all, ever.
Yeah, well, people have some choice in those. Okay. All right, to join, if you want to join Allworth's Money Matters, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean here with Allworth Financial, formerly Hanson McLean Advisors, of course. 833-99-WORTH is our number to join us. Again, that's toll-free, 833-99-WORTH. Numerically, it's 833-999-6784. And we're in Northern California with Lori. Lori, you're with Allworth Financial's Money Matters.
Hi.
Hi, Lori.
Hi.
What can we do
for
you?
Thank you for taking my call. I have a daughter that's going to start college very soon, this coming fall.
Congrats.
And unfortunately, thank you. It's sort of a bittersweet moment here. Unfortunately, the cost of the schooling is quite high, and we're having to borrow. So my question is it better to borrow from the bank, or is it okay to borrow from other sources such as my retirement 401k, or I do have a whole life policy that has some cash value in it?
How much is it going to cost out of pocket? Because what ends up happening, a lot of these schools, particularly private schools, they have like a top line number, and then something like 95% of the students don't pay that. There's these scholarships they get for this or that, and so unless you're in the top 1%, you get some sort of discount on the tuition. So what do you think it's going to cost out of pocket for this next school year?
$43,000. Yeah. And that's after she's gotten the top merit scholarship that
she's studying.
She's going to major in business, but she was able to get into a fast-track law program. So if that's what she wants to do, she will be able to finish the program in 6 years.
And how many children do you have?
Don't tell me
one.
Seven.
How many?
No, just one.
Okay. And why do you need to borrow the money? Why can she not borrow the money? Why is it you that's borrowing the money versus her?
Well, that's a good question. I guess as a parent, I feel kind of obligated to help her.
I would. The way I look is
these federal student loans.
Yeah. In that way, the liability lies on her, not on you. You can always help. You just don't have to.
Well, plus, let's go a step further. There's a lot of political talk right now about reducing, eliminating student debt out there, right? There's a couple of the presidential candidates that are saying we need this mass forgiveness, just all this stuff's coming down.
You beat me to it, Scott. I would,
and there's programs now that if someone goes to work, they work for a nonprofit or work for a government, it's forgiven after 10 years.
That's what they say. They really haven't lived that.
I understand, but there's
but that will get better.
And the rates are low.
And yeah, so I don't think you should borrow a dime. I would have my child borrow every penny of it. It doesn't
at least
mean
the first part of it.
It doesn't mean that you're not going to help her pay those bills off. It just means that if something comes down the road that is a mass forgiveness and you had taken a mortgage out of your home or your 401k or borrowed against your 401k or IRA, then you may miss out on that because of the way that loan was actually titled or structured.
I see. Okay.
So,
and she might not be able to get the full $43,000.
But she can get something. So this is where we actually...
So you're saying... to borrow against her credit, basically?
Yeah, there's no credit. There's no credit.
The reason there's almost $1.5 trillion in student loans.
Because what the child is studying, or the adult, or the senior is studying, remember, there's no age.
This is when Congress took over the government program.
They don't care if you're getting a degree in hypothetical philosophy, if there is such a thing. They don't care what the
or if you can ever get a job in the future, if you're employable in the slightest.
Yeah, I could.
Just give you the money.
I could be studying. I could be getting a doctorate in Sanskrit, right?
In what?
Sanskrit.
What is Sanskrit?
It's a form of something or other. It's writing. Sanskrit.
Oh, Sanskrit.
Sanskrit.
Yes.
Thank you. Sanskrit.
Like Sanskrit. That's
the point.
Dance
exactly.
Or something. That sounds kind of interesting for a moment. Scott,
that's the point exactly. It doesn't matter what your degree is in.
They'll give you the loan.
They'll give you the loan. So
I see.
The thinking you should walk through for the rest of the parents is, one, is this school that much better for $43,000
yes.
a year versus one that is not? So, you know, if
my own path, it was before the student loans were like they are today, which I think we're doing a tremendous disservice to our younger people, frankly. My parents didn't have any money. I didn't have a parent saying, hey, wherever you want to go, Scott, we'll go ahead and pay your way. I went to junior college, and I ended up buying a small business. I ran a little business. It took me 4 years to get through 2 years of junior college. Then I was able to sell a little business, had some money. I was able to go to a better university and finish up. But that was the path that
I
learned more. I got to tell you, I learned more about business
from running a business than you
in the time in junior college than I did in the, you know.
So I have children. I have four children. I have had children at state schools, University of California's, and I have had children at private schools. Right. I have the luxury of doing that. I have relatives who children only went to state schools, and there were the economics drove the decision making. In fact, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day at the gym, and I asked, hey, how are your kids doing? She said, oh, my daughter got a full scholarship to Montana State. And I said, oh, that's great. And the daughter didn't necessarily want to go to that school. And the mother and father said, we don't care where you want to go. It's a good school. You got a full scholarship. Mm-hmm. That's where you're going, right? So the decision making oftentimes is left to the child. Without regard to the economics. So the first question you ask is, what is the best education I could get for the least amount of money at a place that is somewhat desirable for the child? That we can afford. And the second is, how do we pay for it? In your situation, you should not borrow against your 401k.
So let's talk about your other options. So the 401k, if someone's looking about taking a loan from a 401k, here's what actually happens. You're not really borrowing against the asset like you would in a home. So let's say you take out a home equity line of your house, you still own the house. If the house appreciates in value, you still get that appreciation. If you borrow against some securities, let's say you own stock, Chevron Oil, you've owned that forever, and you have a position, you take a loan against that stock through a margin loan. If you have a loan against that, you're still going to participate as the company increases in value and the dividends they pay out. When you have a loan on a 401k, the mechanics behind it, what actually happens is those securities are sold in the 401k. So let's say you have $100,000 in your 401k and you take a $25,000 loan on it, your securities drop to $75,000. So
if the market goes up by 100%, that $25,000 that you took out, you don't participate
in
any
loan,
part of it.
So the loan really is, it's a way to avoid current income taxes because it's not...
But it's not a loan.
Took the money out.
You sold them and took the money out.
And you have to repay it. You got to repay it within 5 years.
And if you leave the employer, you have to pay it too.
Within, I think it's 30 or 60 days.
Yeah, you got to repay it.
You have to repay it.
And if you don't, it's a taxable event to you.
What other assets do you have?
Tell us about the whole life insurance policy.
That one we got many years ago. So there's about a almost $50,000 cash value.
Really?
What's
the face value on it?
$250,000.
Okay, so what I would do is I would actually buy some term life insurance for whoever this is covered for at least that amount. once that term life insurance policy was issued.
Figure out how long a life. You don't need $250,000 life insurance for your whole life,
right? You might need it for 5 years or 10 years, or most certainly until your daughter graduates from college. And you would just replace that with some term life insurance, probably a 10-year level term. And once they issue that, then I would cash in that life insurance policy. And that's the first place I would start with getting assets to
pay
for the child's education. The last place I probably would go is a loan on my house or a 401k. I would actually suspend my 401k contributions, anything above that the employer matches, and use dollars currently out of pocket to pay for the education.
So you would do that first rather than put it away.
That's right. But I remember, I would always put up to the match.
I'd really take a hard look to see, can you
really afford this? What's the total family income?
Net or?
No, gross.
Gross. $180,000.
Right. Okay. And what do you owe on your home?
Right now, about 170.
And how old are you?
50.
You could swing this.
You could afford this.
Yeah, but I'd still have I would do it in this order. Student loans, then cash in out of the life insurance, and then I'd pay out of pocket for the difference. And you can afford it. So luckily for your daughter, you will work. She will graduate from a nice college, hopefully in a 4-year period of time or below, and you will work an extra 2 to 3 years for that pleasure.
Yeah, that's what I'm anticipating. Basically, I'm putting shackles on my feet for this new adventure for her.
Yeah. We all make decisions. I mean, it's a lot less expensive not to have children, but if everyone said that, it'd be terrible.
Well, you know what? You said this whole college conundrum is this affecting the society as a whole, you know.
Well, you know what, Lori? I don't know how we got here.
I know how we got here.
Well, there's many. All right, we can talk about a couple different areas. One is because of these. We just talked about how easy it is to get the money.
Correct.
Student loans.
Correct.
So people come out, they graduate with $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 in student loans.
And so what it means is that there was capital chasing the marketplace.
But how did we get to a point where it's this kind of this philosophy, if you want your kid to have any sort of decent career, they got to go to college. And then it's this 4-year college. They're going to live on campus and have this whole college experience. Somehow we've all bought into that. And my two kids, I bought into it too. And at the same time, I'm thinking there's got that it. You want to talk about something that really needs disruption.
I think so. I mean, especially the fact that the schools keep raising their rates every year.
You know why? It's because they can't.
Well, they all discount.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, Lori. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
It's not enough. I mean, certainly doesn't match the rate of inflation.
That's correct. Yeah. But we're here where we're at. So
yeah. All right. We wish you well, Lori. And I do. I must say, Pat. There is nothing that says a kid needs to go away to some 4-year university to have a decent career.
No.
You went to state school. I went to a state school. I went to junior college first, then a state school.
I had a great college experience. Waited tables all the way through. Didn't receive any money from my parents. I had a blast. My grades weren't actually good.
It is more difficult. College is more expensive today.
Yes.
Pretty tough to do what you did.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
that's
back in the day.
And I had terrible grades until I met my wife.
Really?
Yeah.
They improved?
Oh, immediately. And why? I got into my concentration, which is business.
Ah, well, that makes sense.
That
both
those
thing.
Things.
When you had some class you could care less about.
Yeah, I will never, ever in real life have to identify APADS.
But from a financial planning standpoint, we are fully supportive of those families that can afford to send their kids to wherever they want to go. You earn the money, you save the money. Our job as financial advisors is to help people
structure
things in such a manner to maximize things. Where we have concern is the people that really can't afford, their future can't afford it. And they leverage their future so they can send their kid off to this experience that may or may not be a great positive experience.
Yeah. And sometimes with children getting majors that really won't lead to high-paying jobs, which is fine.
Or they return after their freshman year because they living on their own in the dorm is not the easiest thing to manage.
But as long as capital is cheap to free with no qualifications at getting it, it will drive the asset prices up.
Business 101. Economics 101.
It is. That's it.
Supply and demand. Tons of money chasing it. What happens to the price?
Every asset class, although college is not an asset class, although it could be because you expect a rate of return on it.
But it's right now, Evan's looking at these things. They've all got their bills and people are sending their kids to college. Just be really, as long as you understand what the cost is to you, not the top dollar, what this is going to really cost you long term. How many more years might you be working if you do this? So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take some more calls. 1-833-99-WORTH is the number to join us. You're listening to Scott Hansen and Pat McClain of Allworth's Money Matters.
Can't get enough of Allworth's Money Matters? Visit allworthfinancial.com/radio to listen to the Money Matters podcast. Do you have a financial question that needs answering? Call us at 833-99-WORTH. That's 833-99-WORTH.
Welcome back to Allworth's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hansen.
I'm Pat McClain.
Glad you are with us as we talk about financial matters. And again, if you want to join us, 833-99-WORTH is the number to be part of the program.
So, Scott, before we get into the financial stuff for all of you listening, Scott and I were talking about what you're doing next week, and I said, let's save it for the air, because this is the first time you had mentioned it to me. So what's the latest adventure?
I am going to the Grand Canyon, the southern part of the Grand Canyon, and I'm running, it's the rim to rim to rim.
Okay.
So essentially you head down, which I've never done before, by the way. Head down, you run across the other side, you head back up to the top, turn around, drop back down, run back across, and hike back up.
So there's a river at the bottom of the Grand Canyon, is there not?
I hadn't thought of that. I don't know how I'm getting across.
Really?
That's pretty funny.
Well, there is a big... Well, okay. I believe it might be called the Colorado River.
I do understand there's a river there, and I don't know how we're getting across. So... there's a group of us doing it. My buddy, who's crewing for us, did this a few years ago by himself, incidentally.
So how far of a run is it?
It's about just under 50 miles, 48 miles, I think, is what it is.
So you run down so that so by the time you get to the bottom, your toenails are gone. They're all your toes are all swollen. Then you run, you swim across this river.
I don't think we're swimming across the river.
They put weights on you, and then
I don't know how we're getting across the river. That's interesting.
You get across the river, you run up the other side, you turn around, and you go back. And this is all without stopping?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much.
50 miles.
I think it's 48 or something like
that. How long will it take you?
I think 12 hours, what we're shooting for.
So 4 miles.
Yeah.
An hour.
Doesn't sound that bad, does it?
Sounds miserable. Are you kidding? Are you out of your mind? It sounds awful.
It sounds like a fun adventure. See what you can do. I'm doing it with two buddies of mine that are both, Chris and Roy, both extremely strong athletes, and my son, who's 21. He may not make it the whole way.
Does he run marathons?
He has.
So what happens if you don't make it the whole way? You are in the Grand Canyon. They just leave you there?
The birds eventually pick at you.
So. I mean, what is this?
No. Well, he's going to have to climb back out one side or the other. And I have a buddy of mine that's crewing for us. So,
what's the crew guy do?
In case my son can't make it.
He runs down there and puts him on his back?
My son has not trained enough. And he still wants to join us. So
okay.
He might not make it.
All right. Well, good luck. Sounds like a blast, Scott.
And I think my dad might, we're doing it in a couple of days here, but my dad might come out and...
All right. I'm not telling you what to do, but I would actually focus on the river at the bottom. I'm just me. That's just me.
Well, there's, and it's, I just, I don't know why, but I tend to enjoy.
Yeah.
And those sort of things. It's a,
It's a little off.
It's a little off. I understand. It's most off. People don't quite understand why you'd want to do such a thing.
And what?
And I don't really understand. Also, I know it brings me joy.
Yeah, and you found people that are friends of yours that like similar stuff.
I enjoy those people.
Yeah.
Hanging out with them brings me joy.
What do you guys talk about? Like, oh, how once I was running and someone was throwing rocks at me? Is that what you guys talk about?
So years ago, we did a relay race where it's a couple hundred miles and there's 12 different runners. And some guy just offered to be the driver for us. It's 24 hours or whatever it is. At the end of it, we're heading back home, and he says, you guys are the strangest group. He says, the whole time you do nothing but complain about how hard this leg was and your leg, your pain, and now you can't. You all talking about you can't wait to do it again.
Yeah,
and there's something to be said about that.
That's a little.
I don't know why we're off, such off.
Well, anyway, I just thought we would share a little bit of Scott Hansen's personal life.
That's what I
do. So they too could recognize what a strange individual you are.
I've done 200-mile bike races and all kinds.
Yeah,
of
you
things.
Did the 100-mile trail run,
Western States 100. I don't know why I like this stuff. My body seems to hold up pretty good.
I once watched the whole Boston Marathon on television.
And I ran Boston Marathon a year ago, guiding a blind runner in the heavy rain, which was a great experience.
That sounds like fun as well.
And I had some hip issues, and I had stem cell therapy a year and a half ago, and I think it really made some difference.
Although that is not medically proven. There is no...
there hasn't been any studies on it.
Yeah.
It's correct. Not enough...
But whatever works for you. Anyway,
whether it's placebo or not, I don't know.
Let's,
it works.
Let's take some calls. All right, yeah. If you want to join the show, it's 833-99-WORTH, 833-99-WORTH. I did bring it up. That is correct.
Let's go to Cincinnati and talk with Brian. Brian, you're with All Worth's Money Matters.
How are you guys doing today?
Wonderful. How are you doing, Brian?
Good. I will at least say that adventure you're talking about, that would bring pain to me, not joy.
No kidding, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's no sense.
Anyway, my question here is, just give you a little background here. I've been working 17 years at where I work, and plan to get to 38. I have a pretty good pension plan in place. I also have a matching 401k, so that's pretty much where most of my money goes right now.
Yep.
So again, once I retire, I have a pension, a 401k, and Social Security, assuming that it's there. My wife and I have 5 kids. We put through private school.
Wow.
One's out of the house. 2 are currently in college, and we have 2 younger ones at the ages of 8 and 5. And I'm finally getting out of my child care paying days.
It's about time for another child. I'm just kind of looking at the math here. One
completely,
out.
Completely done here. So this, which leads to my question here. I have a Fifth Third Bank stock that's worth about $15,000. And when I'm sort of looking in the long run, I'm not even sure how much that would even majorly contribute towards my retirement, given that I have, again, the pension of 401k. And my question is, I'm looking at maybe towards cashing this out and putting it towards my youngest kids, the 8 and 5-year-olds, into a jump-starting their 529. I know that I would have to pay a capital gains tax of 15%.
It's a great idea.
The question, so my question is this a good idea or
great.
A stupid idea?
Great idea.
Yeah, I agree. What's your family income now?
About $200,000.
Okay. And does the wife work outside of the home?
Yes.
How much of the $15,000? How much gain is in there? What's the cost basis for this? Do you know?
It's probably. I bought that stock right after the stock market tanked back in 2008. So it was about $1,000, about $1,200 I put into it. So you're talking about a gain of like 13 something.
I think it's a brilliant move.
Yeah, it would do it. And so you're going to recognize the gain now, but in the 529 plan, it's going to grow tax deferred and it's going to come out tax free as long as the child uses it for education purposes.
Right.
So I like the idea.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Okay.
You might put a little bit more, run the numbers, I'd put a little bit more in my 8-year-old than I did with the 5-year-old.
I thought about that. I was probably going to bounce out at like a 60-40 or 65-35 percentage kind of way 60, there.
Yeah, 60-40 is probably pretty
close. Or you can run the numbers and just say how much you need and work backwards, and it'll tell you.
So let me ask you this question. So I work in Cincinnati, but I live in Kentucky. And the way the state of Kentucky's 529 plan works, they, and I don't know if other states do this too, is they sort of have – where you can put your money. They sort of make it easy for you, and the risk of the stocks and whatever else they have mm-hmm. it in there, it's based on the age of the kid. So
that's
as a kid gets closer to 18, the risk gets lower.
Yep.
So is it a smart move just to kind of go with the easy way to do it and just base it on the age and sort of the brackets that they
have?
I would use the most states have an age-based and an aggressive age-based. You want to use the aggressive age-based.
Okay.
So most states have that. So you want to use the aggressive age-based. And you don't have to use that particular state.
But they might. Is there a tax? Does Kentucky offer any sort of a tax benefit for contributing? Some states do.
I don't think they do.
Okay. Right. So if that's the case, there's no tax benefit in doing it. And I don't know. We don't know if that's true or not in the state of Kentucky. Or... even the state of Ohio, you would just go to whatever state has the lowest cost program. And so every state, which is a weird function of how these 529 plans work, that the state
they were created from prepaid tuition plans.
Which never worked.
And then somehow someone figured out, you know, we could create these accounts.
And so I recommend oftentimes either the state of California plan or the state of Utah plan.
Oh, wow. You just taught me something here. So I assume that where you put your kids' money into for a 529, it had to be in a state you lived in.
No. For whatever reason, it's inexplicable why you can't, why their state only has one vendor that they're assigned to.
Uh-huh.
There's no reason for it. And these vendors sometimes come and go. But the state of Utah has Vanguard, or at least it used to. So you can just Google lowest cost 529 plans in the United States
and use that one.
And use that one.
Okay.
And we like the age-based thing.
The aggressive age-based.
How did you pick the Fifth Third bank?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, like, why
that?
Financial crisis, and you're like, well, I think I'll go out and buy a bank stock. They may not survive, but what the heck? And the name Fifth Third, I like that name. They skip the one and two. They go to
then go backwards, six, Fifth, five.
Third. I don't even know what that means, but
it's a huge company here in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
It's the biggest bank here. And it was probably just simple thought was I would assume if a bank is going to survive, if one bank around in this city is going to survive the stock market crash, it was going to be that one. It was just as simple as that.
Nope.
And when their stock went down to $1.50 or whatever it was, I'm like, you know, what do I have to lose by throwing in a grand here or whatever it was I put in at the time? So
good for you.
It worked out.
And how did they come up with the name Fifth Third? Do you know?
I don't know. And you know what? They have some in Florida as well. I don't know that whole history.
Oh. All right, whatever.
That's all right. Well, you made money on it.
Yeah.
Keep up the great work, Brian.
Yeah.
Okay, so thank you. Yes, thank you for the recommendation. I wanted to make sure I want to get this done by this summer before, you know, my kids turn another year older. So.
Perfect.
Perfect. Okay, thank you very much.
I appreciate the call, Brian. Again, if you want to join us, 1-833-99-WORTH is the number to be part of the program here. 833-99-WORTH. 2 weeks ago. Is it 2 weeks ago?
I don't know.
You don't know what I'm talking about.
That's correct. So, I think that might have been a rhetorical question.
Uber went public.
Okay.
It was it was in the kind of the financial realm. It was a big deal. Everyone's watching Uber. What's going to happen to Uber? And the stock came out and declined in value the first right from opening.
Yes.
Which is kind of unusual.
A little bit unusual, but over time. That typically the stocks oftentimes don't keep their opening price or their IPO.
Yes, and some do horribly afterwards, and some do phenomenally well.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, what happens is that in most stock issues, the issuers or the companies that underwrite it actually have restrictions on how quickly insiders can sell shares in order to help support the price.
Yes, 6 months typically. I think Uber, something like that.
Yeah, to help support the price. Right, because remember when a company goes public, what are they doing? They're actually raising capital. They're selling themselves to a broader group of people. They're either raising capital or they're redeeming their own shares in order to mitigate what they believe to be risk or the likelihood that the stock will not go up.
And Pat, it used to be that a company would go public to raise capital
in order to invest in itself.
Yes, right?
And to bring some liquidity to early shareholders.
Fair enough. I think if you go back, yes, but if you go back far enough, it was more about raising some capital. Company's growing.
We need more working capital. Money. We can borrow it.
We can only borrow so much. It's like, let's bring in some more partners, essentially. What do you think about
it? We can sell shares in ourselves to others.
It's a pretty simple process. It's, the idea behind it is fairly simple. It's like, let's bring in some more partners. So it's similar to how you look at Shark Tank. That's a micro level, tiny companies. Companies go public, and they're bringing in other partners, which will dilute the rest of shareholders and whatnot. But
the idea being is that they raise capital.
They raise capital.
That's what it used to be.
Yes.
Now it is.
There is so much money in venture capital and private equity that companies stay private years and years and decades because when they need more capital, they don't have to go to the public markets. There's plenty of private investors that will fund them.
And why is that?
Well, one, it's pretty – the public markets is – it's a – pain in the you know what to go public anymore. There's the regulations are
fairly onerous.
Yes, and expensive
to comply with
all the rules and regulations.
Yeah. And a large part of these are the result of the last Great Recession, where many of these rules were put in place.
And before that too,
there was some.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, it's so a lot of companies don't want to go public, but there's also so much private capital floating around. But what
is private capital?
It's typically pension funds, very wealthy individuals that have put money in these limited partnership structures to go out and invest in other companies. Maybe through a venture capital that's invest in some startups or private equity, typically invest in companies that have been around for a while.
And a pension, why would a pension fund do this? Well, they have billions and billions of billions of dollars, and they need to deploy that for what they believe will be the highest rate of return or the least amount of risk or both.
What we're seeing now, oftentimes, when these companies go public, it's not really the companies. They're not going public because they can't find capital other places, because there is so much money sloshing around in the venture capital and private equity space that if they want just more capital, there's always someone they could sell some shares to.
They're going public in order to actually redeem the shares of someone who was an early investor.
That's what's happening in the marketplace today.
So if I am a private equity fund or a pension fund, then I would decide that, hey, I'm only going to stay invested for 5 years or 7 years or whatever the time period is, and you go from there.
Yeah, so what was interesting, like in Uber, there was a couple of their early investors – which typically they would hold their shares. These are they were selling.
They wanted out.
As part of the whole process, they were selling out.
They were selling out. And Uber's an interesting company because, well, it's not that interesting anymore because many, many companies that go public have absolutely no earnings. They make no money. But history tells us that some of them can, because Amazon, for the first number of years when it was a publicly traded company, made no money.
Well, of course, everyone's pointing to Amazon now.
Yeah, but not everyone will be Amazon.
Of course not.
In fact, most will not.
Well, Amazon makes the majority of their money in their Amazon Web Services, their cloud services, which is where most of their profits come
from. Which I still can't understand how I ordered fertilizer from Amazon Prime and had a 30-pound bag of fertilizer delivered to my house.
This spring?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago. I'm like, this is crazy. They didn't charge me anything to deliver it. It was the same cost as I would have gotten at Home Depot. And someone just carried it to my door and dropped it.
The same day?
It took like 3 days.
Sometimes
I'm not kind of an instantaneous fertilizer guy. I can wait. I can wait a couple days to get the fertilizer.
So back to these, and we're going to see more companies come public, huge companies. WeWork,
which is a very, very interesting but unproven business model, as is and was Uber and Lyft.
Yeah, Lyft also went share price down quite a bit from its from an investment standpoint, if you want to invest in these companies, remember a couple things. One is you are speculating that this is going to be the next winner.
You're not building a well-balanced portfolio if you're overweighting any of these individual stocks.
No. And secondly, if you're going to invest in them, have it be a very small piece of your portfolio, something you could afford to lose.
Be prepared to be disappointed and delighted if something positive turns out.
If you're going to invest in a company.
Remember, someone else is selling these. Someone else doesn't want to own them anymore. It isn't like years and years ago where they were raising capital. This is someone trying to get rid of their shares, who probably is a more intelligent investor than you are. Why are they getting rid of it? Sometimes they're just looking to return capital to the original shareholders. Sometimes they just believe that there may not be as much upside as there once was, or maybe there's a combination of both.
Well, anytime you invest money, there's someone's on the other side of the trade.
Someone's selling.
There's a big difference, though, between investing in an individual company and investing in a broad basket of companies through, say, an index fund or a mutual fund, ETF.
Yes.
Because companies are going to come and go. Someone's going to go bust. I was talking to my wife yesterday, 2 days ago, and she said she was heading to Kinko's.
Oh.
I said, Kinko's? I said,
I think it's UPS now, isn't it?
Kinko's, I said, what, are you going to Woolworth's next, right? And she joked back at me, and she said, no, I'm going to Thrifty's, and then she threw out some other names of companies that no longer existed, right?
Yeah. I'm going to Montgomery Ward's.
Yeah, Montgomery Ward, all these companies that no longer exist anymore. And I was just reminded again about how business cycles change, and from an investment standpoint, it's one thing about being...
diversified portfolios, which is...
You're not going to get rich, but it's a way to minimize risk.
But there is nothing wrong with investing in individual stocks as long as you actually understand.
And you have enough of them.
Yes.
Knowing that they're going to... How many individual stocks do you own?
One.
What percentage of your portfolio is it?
1%.
Okay.
1% maybe.
And where's... And you get your equity exposure how?
Broad index funds and actively managed broad market. And quite frankly, we've owned this stock for 15, 20 years because I know the guy that actually ran the company. That's the only reason we owned it. And I knew the guy and I trusted him. I thought he was a great businessman. So I still do.
It's the one stock you own.
That's the one stock I own.
Well, I ran into somebody who had an order in for Uber on the day it went public, and he was happy that they didn't fulfill all the shares he had requested because it was oversubscribed. But
it still found value. I did not know that.
Yeah,
it's unusual.
He said, I wanted 1,000 shares, and they only allocated 100 towards me.
Normally, if something is oversubscribed, the price actually goes up, normally.
A lot of people wanting out.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting time because we're going to see more of these companies come in public.
And soon.
Yeah, the window's pretty open right now.
Yeah, and soon.
Some of it, it's like, I don't know like a company like Uber is losing billions of dollars at some point in time, which what it means is when you take an Uber or a Lyft, the price you pay, that is not sustainable.
Yeah, the thing they keep talking about is scale, and I'm thinking, don't they have scale? Because I've been all over the United States. Well, not all over. I've been around the United States.
And different parts of the world.
That I have gotten an Uber. I think they keep talking about, well, they do more. They'll get to scale and they'll start making profits. And I'm thinking, you got to be pretty close.
Well,
Uber Eats.
No business model is you lose a little on each customer, but make it up in volume.
I was in Southern California and the whole family rented the little scooter things.
The Lyft, where they Lyft or? Uber, yeah, they've got a bunch of them.
My kids have all the apps. So what happened is I didn't have the apps, so they would actually sign into a Lyft one and an Uber one at the same time, and then I would ride whatever they signed up for. And quite frankly, they're really dangerous. They're super, super dangerous.
Now you're sounding like an old person. So anyway, when we see these sort of IPOs, just... If you want to participate in some for fun, think of it more as sport. We've got a lot of clients who enjoy investing, right? And,
yes.
and people invest for a variety of reasons. One is to protect wealth that's been earned somewhere else.
Yeah, it's a store of wealth.
Two is sometimes people want to speculate on a certain thing. And some people find it's a hobby. They really enjoy it.
Yeah, they like thinking about it, looking at it, reading about it, talking about it, which is fine.
Which is fine. You just don't want to bet your retirement.
You don't want to bet the farm
on the hobby, which is, it's important to say, all right, if we're going to invest in some individual stocks, maybe we allocate 5% of our overall savings to that, or 10% of our overall savings, and then make some choices and some things like that. But not betting the farm on it, because it's going to come back and again, diversification is really about protecting what you have, not about becoming wealthier. If you're 31 years old and you want to take the risk, fine. But the closer you are to get to the point where you're...
Yeah, don't take the risk.
Yeah, you're not going to want to take the risk. All right, we're getting close to the end of the program here. And want to remind our listeners a couple things. One is Hanson McLain has now become Allworth Financial. So if you're like, where's this Allworth coming from? We're still the same people, still the same company. We've rebranded, upgraded our name in large part because we started in Sacramento. We were just in Sacramento for decades, but we are now with clients in every state.
And we do more than just wealth management and financial planning.
And we wanted a name that really kind of covered all of the
services we offer.
Yeah. And we think Allworth is a pretty good name.
And this was much more systematic than we named the firm 26 years ago when we actually just flipped a coin and see whose name
Hanson
came first.
McLain. But so it's Allworth Financial. And if you haven't been on our website lately, we strongly encourage you to do so. This radio program podcast we've been doing for 20 plus years is really about education, about helping you make wise choices and to learn. And our website is built very similarly. So we've got... On the website, we have our blogs with all kinds of articles, but we've got podcasts, we've got tutorials, we've got webinars, we've got you name it.
Videos, all kinds of videos, and a place where you can actually...
See, if you're trying to figure out how do you best structure your retirement income, or trying to figure out how do you think about healthcare, what do you do with Social Security, start on our website because it's...
Allworthfinancial.com.
Got a lot of good stuff. Anyway, we're out of time. I hope to have you here join us again this next week or be a podcast. Again, if you're a podcast listener, we would appreciate it if you take the time to review us. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. This has been Allworth's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Allworth Financial, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice. You should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.